First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God, letting go, oh God.
And welcome to Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Larry Rhodes, or Doubt of Five, DJ name. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. Today I have with me a special guest, John Webster, a local author. He wrote a book called 10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God, and we'll be talking about free thought books today, and might as well get started. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to be here. I had met Larry Rhodes at the gathering we have of atheists, the Atheist Society in Knoxville. It happens on Tuesday nights at Barley's. And I had gone on meetup.com to look for an atheist meetup group, and I came across Larry's group. And there's about 30 or 40 of us that meet Tuesdays from 5:30 p.m. to about... What was it go until about 9 p.m.? Is that
about,
is it?
Nine,
about 9 o'clock? Mm-hmm. And Larry actually started this group several years ago, and recently the group's gotten pretty popular, and I have Larry to thank for that. So I appreciate you starting that group. I've met a lot of great people through this group, including Larry, and today we'll be talking about Larry's book, Atheism. What's it all about? One of the things about the book is that it has a quote by Larry on the back cover, which says, "When mankind learns that there are no gods, it will be as important to human development as the discovery of fire." And I think that's a pretty good quote myself. Glad that Larry put that on the book. I think it was a good decision. And first of my questions to Larry would be, why did you choose that quote specifically to put on the back cover and not any of the other quotes in the book instead?
Well, one thing, I strongly feel that all the monies and efforts and time being put into worshiping a non-existent God could give us a great leap forward in humanity and cures for disease and ending suffering of our fellow man. I just think that it would be equivalent to the discovery of fire if that happened. We wouldn't have to keep wasting our resources in a thousand different directions. We could pull together as a single humanity or a machine, if you will.
Good quote, good quote. Scandinavian countries are, for the majority of them, atheist people. And I think that the Scandinavian model of government is a good one, and also think that one of the reasons that Scandinavian people are so happy is because not only because they're atheists, but because their standard of living is so high, so they don't need religion, and their education is so high. They have free education in the Scandinavian countries, and as I've pointed out before, the higher your education is, the more education you receive, the more likely you are to reject religion and to become an atheist. So that's one point about why the Scandinavian countries are more atheistic, and one of the reasons they're so happy is because their standard of living is so high because they have excellent social programs. One of the questions we can start out with here, that was my first question about the back of the book, but one of my first questions to Larry would be, do you recall when you met your first atheist or learned that some people don't believe in God? And that's my first question.
Well, I had always heard that there were people out there that didn't believe in God, but I had never really met one until I got out of the Navy and went to college. And yes, it was a memorable meeting because I ended up marrying her, And great story. We were together about 17 years altogether. She was a very intelligent young girl from South Carolina, and she skipped her senior year in high school to go to college. And there I was, a 22-year-old from the Navy. And she knew all about Christianity because her father was a deacon in the Southern Baptist Church back home. So all of my reasons for staying in the religion and believing in God, she knew the religion better than I did, and she could answer all my questions and tell me why it just didn't make sense. And it wasn't too long before I was an atheist myself. I'd say by the end of the first year at college, I was an atheist.
There you go. As Larry was pointing out, he said his girlfriend at the time and his future wife was an atheist, and that she knew more about the Bible than he did. And that is not an uncommon occurrence on standard tests where the subject matter is covering religion. It is often the case that atheists and secular people know more about the Bible than do believers themselves, even though religious people go to church and are supposed to be, according to their pastors and, you know, what they like to say about themselves, are studying the Bible. And it's the case that atheists know more about the Bible than believers. My next question would be,
Let me say one other thing about that before we get off the topic. I have studied the Bible so much more now that I was an atheist than I ever did when I was a Christian. I was born and raised into a Christian household, and I never read the Bible. I just listened to what the preacher said and accepted what he said. But once I actually got to be an atheist and knew the reasons against it, I couldn't believe that what she was telling me was in the Bible was in the Bible. And that was a big jump start forward because I hadn't read it. I just took the preacher's word that it was all good, but it's anything but a good book.
Exactly. As I've pointed out before, it seems that the Bible is not really required reading, but recommended reading. And as Bill Maher has pointed out before, it is like the disclaimer on a software package. Pretty much most people just scroll to the bottom and click agree rather than reading it themselves. Larry's told us a little bit about his deconversion experience, but I'd like to know a little bit more about it, what the actual process was and how his thinking went, which led to him becoming an atheist. How did that go?
Well, it's kind of like all the way through high school, I converted when I was 11 through peer pressure and mother pressure. She always wanted me to go down and get converted, accept Jesus and all that. It was peer pressure. I didn't want to go. And all through high school and through the Navy, I went through the motions of saying I was a Christian, and I did believe that God was real and that I was going to hell when I died if I didn't accept Jesus and all this stuff. I believed all the claims of Christianity, but I didn't like the people. And for some reason, you know, the preachers and all the people in church, they glad hand you, and they always trying to sell you on their version of redemption. At a gut level, I didn't have a trust of them. And then when I finally met an atheist, I figured out why I didn't have a trust for them. They were selling a non-existent product, and they had to make you believe that the product existed so that they could also sell you the cure. And it just all came together when I had some conversations with Hilda, was her name. So it came together then. But as far as my deconversion, it was, you know, the first year in college and the conversations I had with Hilda. I remember one particular Christmas evening, and we stayed up pretty much all night talking about these things. And by the next morning, my questions had been answered, and I didn't have any good answers myself. But a lot of time has gone by since then. That was 1973, and I've studied an awful lot of Christian apologetics since then. So I figured I'd put what I knew in a book, and that's what you have in your hand there.
There you go. You've mentioned books that you've read. What books would you consider recommended reading for religious studies, and these can be both books that are pro-religion and anti-religion. What books would you recommend to somebody who is trying to figure out the way things are and trying to figure out the truth about religion?
Well, the ones that are pro-religion, of course, the Evidence for Christ, or I can't think of the name of it.
The Case for Christ.
Case for Christ.
Lee Strobel, is that right?
Lee Strobel. He makes the claim that he's going to ask the hard questions and follow them right to the end. And he never questions anybody in the book who isn't already an evangelical Christian. Take the book, look at the back cover, look at all the people that he interviews in that book, and you'll notice that they're all recognized Christian evangelicals. Now, as far as...
So it's a little bit biased sources is what you're saying.
A little bit.
To say the least.
If he had asked any one of the current modern atheists, as they were, he would get entirely different answers, and he would also get some very pointed questions that he wouldn't be able to answer, I'm sure.
Now, Lee Strobel was a former journalist and lawyer. Is that correct?
I think so. But as far as books that I've read that made a big difference to me in my atheism, I had read quite a bit. I listened to a lot of podcasts and stuff. But I had been in the atheist closet since 73. And when 2001 came around, that was one of the main reasons that I came out of the closet to represent for atheism. Because it was religious people that were flying planes into our buildings and the Pentagon, but it was also religious people who were trying to come back and start a war over it. I mean, they were like, our God is bigger than your God type of thing, and it led us into a war with Iraq where we didn't need to be there. All the people that had done the terrorism acts in 9/11 were Saudi Arabia. We should have had some very pointed discussions with Saudi Arabia, but that never happened. Matter of fact, we're still giving Saudi Arabia a pass because of the oil trade that we have with them. Anyway, where I'm getting at or trying to is that the book that I read that really made me come out of the closet was Carl Sagan's A Demon Haunted World. It has a subtitle of Science as a Candle in the Dark, which is very apt. I recommend everybody get it, read it, and take it hard.
There's several quotes in your book that I've come across that I really enjoyed. One of the chapters that I liked especially was Chapter 5 in Larry's book called Atheism, What's It All About? Chapter 5 is titled What the Bible Could Have Said. And now you have, is it 23 things the Bible could have said? I don't really have a count on them.
Just kept writing.
And one of the series of questions you asked in here, do you want me to go ahead and read it?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. In Larry's book in Chapter 5, he says, if the Bible really were the inspired word of an omniscient God who loved us and wanted the best for us, would it really have been filled with genocide, plagues, commandments, threats, and acceptable ways to beat your slaves? Rather, wouldn't you expect that he would have taken time to calmly explain the workings of the world and the universe, and then given you reasons to do the things that would actually be beneficial to the future of humanity? I agree with this statement, and I would also go on to point out that many apologists who people would argue are pretty much best equipped to give the defense of God and God's existence, even though God doesn't exist, it takes a master's degree in presuppositional Christian apologetics to prove the existence of God. And since Christians claim that God is an omniscient, omnibenevolent, omnipotent being that is conscious and wants everybody to know he exists, this is what it takes to defend God. And why can't God just prove his existence himself? Why does he need other people to do it for him?
Right, and the thing about it is the belief in God, if you listen to the religious apologetics and the evangelicals, the belief in God is the most important belief that you can have, bar none. There's nothing more important. But then you've got a book that can be interpreted 10,000 different ways and has been interpreted that many times, and you have that many different religions just based on the Bible, not counting all the other religions that are not based on the Bible. if there is one omnipotent God, he could have put it all to rest by creating a Bible that was a living book that would speak to people in their own language, directly to their heart, without any need for interpretation. And yet we find something that's clearly written by human beings.
Exactly. One thing I like to point out is that many Christians will say that God didn't dictate the Bible, but divinely inspired it and let each person choose their own writing style and their own words to communicate the message God had divinely inspired. And that's a red flag to be skeptical right there, because if there's a perfect being out there, wouldn't he know the exact words that should be used to communicate his message? There are several writing styles in the Bible, some of which are very poetic, such as the books of Paul. However, some books, such as Genesis, are terribly written. And that's a, like I said, a red flag right there to give you an idea that the Bible may be just a bunch of bull.
At least 2,000-year-old beliefs and stories. I mean, it's a book of anecdotes. These are stories that were told around the campfire for centuries before it was actually committed to paper. That's the Old Testament. And the New Testament wasn't even put to paper until, what, 30 to 70 years after Christ supposedly died. Now, I'm not saying Christ never lived. He might never have lived. But at the same time, it's easier just to say he did live. But at the same time, you can't credit the miraculous goings-on attributed to him any more than you can say that King Arthur lived. But at the same time, even if he did live, it doesn't mean that Merlin and magic and dragons all existed. These were embellishments that were added to his lore after he died to make him seem bigger and badder and better as the stories were told and passed around.
Exactly. And one thing about writing a book 30 to 90 years after somebody had died and after the events occurred is if you try to remember something that happened 30 to 90 years after it happened, you're bound to have some inaccuracies as to what exactly happened. And there are some discrepancies in the Gospels, such as at Jesus' baptism, where in one book the author has God say at Jesus' baptism, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." And in another book it says, "You are my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Now this is an extraordinary occurrence. This is God speaking before a multitude. There are several people around to hear this, and they couldn't remember who God was speaking to. This is something very important, and I think that they would have at least gotten it right, or at least had the Holy Spirit come upon them to get them to correct their contradictions, to have it say either, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased," or "You are my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." They've had literally thousands of years to correct this mistake, and they seem perfectly fine with it, and how it contradicts each other.
And in this day of enlightenment and internet access, anybody can go on there and just type in contradictions of the Bible, and you'll get hundreds, if not thousands, of contradictions. Was the first Jesus's first sermon, was it on the mount or was it on the plain? There are two different versions of that in the Bible. Who showed up at the tomb? Who were they with? Who did they see at the tomb? There's four different versions of that. It's just all through the Bible there are contradictions. Even the story of how the earth and universe began have contradictions between the first two books. So, I mean, this is not a work of an omniscient being, obviously. Even inspired beings by his work, his inspiration was apparently not very clear to these people. Anyway, so it's much easier to think that like this holy book, like any other holy book, was made up of tales told by people who didn't know any better and were just trying to find answers in nature for things that they could not explain.
And another quote from the book, Larry's book, Atheism, What's It All About? In chapter 8, chapter 8 is entitled, "Religion Hijacks Everything." And on page 43, it has a quote from Luke 14:25-26, which says, "And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And Larry points out after this verse, this is very much like something any modern day cult leader would say: turn your back on your family, and if they don't follow you into our family, turn your back on your family if they don't follow you into our family or try to turn you against me.
Right. And religion wants to replace your family in so many different ways. I mean, look at the Catholic Church. You don't have a father anymore. Their father is your father. They're sisters in Christ and brothers in Christ. And they'll tell you that if your brother does not want to come to Christ, then probably you shouldn't spend any more time with him. He can only lead you into sin and lead you into damnation. This is not good for humanity. This is not good for the future of humanity. It splits us and divides us against each other, even down to our family unit.
And another quote from the book, this is taken from chapter 11. Chapter 11 is entitled, "Something Evil This Way Comes to Springfield." And the quote on page 65, which Larry wrote, is, "Faith doesn't give you answers. It simply stops you from asking questions."
That's true. That particular blog post was an answer to an article I read about the Catholic Church. I think it was in Springfield, Illinois. The Catholic leaders there were getting together because they were going to pass a law allowing gay marriage.
Imagine that.
And they were going to get together and pray and do exorcisms to exorcise the homosexual demons from Springfield. Well, I guess that didn't work out very well. First of all, because there are no demons, it's hard to exorcise a demon that doesn't exist. However, did you know the Catholic Church is hiring even more and more exorcist specialists at this day? I mean, they train them themselves, and then they're training more and more of them to be available for their flock.
And one of the things about the Catholic Church is lately they have had a new pope. Pope Francis is a controversial figure both on the left and on the right. He is for things that I am for, and he is against things. Wait, no, he is for things I am for, and he is against things I am for, should I say. I like to say that because of Pope Francis, or at least some of his views are refreshing, I like to say that out of all the popes that have existed in my lifetime, Pope Francis is my favorite, and I hate them all.
Well, the problem with the Pope is he talks a good game, but he doesn't really do anything. The ban on condoms is still in place, which is causing great havoc in northern Africa from the AIDS epidemic, and then he blames the people who are using the condoms as spreading AIDS. Abstinence doesn't work. There's an old joke that says abstinence works so well for priests, you know it's going to work for your teenager. it doesn't work at all. People are going to have sex. It's better for them to be prepared for the sexual experience, to know what to do about STDs, which precautions to take, and take preventive measures to prevent unnecessary or unwanted pregnancies, all of which you can just throw away by the side of the road because the Pope isn't for that. He's also against homosexuality, and he's against homosexual marriage, same-sex marriage. He's against allowing women to rise to positions of leadership in the church. So women, as far as he's concerned, are second-class citizens. It says in the Bible that women are dirty during and after their period. If they have a woman child, they're dirty twice as long as a male child, et cetera, et cetera. And he has not said anything or changed any position of the church on those matters. But he does have some good sound bites, better than any of the previous popes.
One of the things I would like to see about the Catholic Church change is the fact that priests and clergy are not allowed to marry. They say that, oh, the church is my bride. I am so dedicated to the church that I cannot marry because I don't have time.
Another hijacking.
I don't have time for a wife, or if they could include female clergy, I don't have time for a husband. The problem with this is that having this in place attracts people who are attracted to children. And they say, oh, well, I can't have a wife because the church is my wife, and I'm so dedicated to the church that I'm not going to marry. If I could change anything about the Catholic Church, one of the things I would change is I would let the clergy have wives, and if they choose to have a female clergy, I would let them have husbands. This way they could have a sexual outlet and would quit being predatory on children.
It's so true. We're down at the bottom of the hour. I think I'm going to do a station identification and play a song that's pretty much in the mode that we were just talking about, the Catholic Church. This is WOZO 103.9, Low Power FM, Knoxville, Tennessee.
All dressed up like a Christmas tree, with velvet, lace, and gold. They took us to their sacred house, and we did what we were told. They filled up our heads with stories, and they told us that we could be saved if we sang and praised their hero. But he never showed his face. They warned us to watch out for Satan, who'd be waiting there to capture our soul. If we didn't heed all of their wishes, he would drag us all down through that hole. We'd burn and we'd scream there forever, and our cries, they would never be heard. Yes, the innocence of little children will accept the liar's word. Get down on your knees, dear Father, and beg now forgiveness for me. Show me that you're truly sorry for the person that I couldn't be. Show me some tears now of sorrow, show me a face that is real. My innocent and lonely existence was never left there for you to steal. They take away all of your childhood, they'll rob you of all of your dreams. Their cruelty, it hurts and will leave you with scars that can never be seen. And we are all left here to suffer with the heartache of struggle and strife. And our tears, they'll never dry up, they follow us on through life. Get down on your knees, dear sister, and beg now forgiveness from me for the cruelty towards all those children and the pain that you'll never see. The mothers that lost all their babies and never would see them again. The cries from their beds still remain in their heads, and slowly it drives them insane. Pack your bags with your souvenirs, your paintings, your gold, your chandeliers.
Take all your sermons and all of your songs. You won't be back no more. Take your church and your holy shame, your evil deeds from where you came. Your candles have melted and no one cares. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more.
That was Get Down on Your Knees, Dear Father. I don't even know who the artist is. I can't seem to find it online. If anybody knows, you can call in. We do take questions. The phone number here is 333-5937, 333-5937. And where were we now on our discussion?
Okay. Hey, guys, just getting ready to talk to you about a quote in your book from Chapter 15. This is the book Larry wrote called Atheism, What's It All About? And from Chapter 15, Chapter 15 is entitled Why I Don't Believe in God. And on page 81, Larry says, you will then say, oh, that's why you have to have faith. Why? Many people in the Old Testament either saw God or his miracles. They didn't have to rely on faith alone. Even Jesus supposedly gave his disciples to demonstrate the truth of his message. Why are we supposed to just have faith? And I think this is a very good point, especially considering that today we have audio recording devices and video recording devices. And, you know, why doesn't God do some miracles like he did in the Bible, especially biblical scale miracles that, you know, would have to be tested by our advanced knowledge that we have today, which is more advanced than they had back in during the days of the Bible, which you could easily trick people into believing that you're a Messiah back then. And if we had some biblical scale miracles today, we could, you know, check them out and, you know, confirm if, you know, this was indeed, you know, divine, or if it was some fabrication or some trick designed to fool people into thinking that they were true miracles.
Yeah. Even though there's face, what is it? The graphic design softwares would be so easy to fabricate a miracle these days, it would still be pretty easy for the graphics professionals to be able to tell what is real or what is not, and why it's not, and how it was done. So we're still waiting, I guess, for any audio visual
confirmation of the divine, yeah,
of miracles. One thing that David Hume said back in the 1700s, says, we know that there are no miracles because we would have to give more credence to the bending of physical laws than to the fact that someone might be lying or mistaken, and which is a pretty heavy statement for like 400 years ago, but it's true. I mean, someone comes to you and says they saw a miracle, well, you can either think it's true, which would mean that there had to be bending of physical laws, or that he was mistaken, or he just was telling a lie to you. Now, if you have a miracle happen to yourself, that's a different issue altogether. But however, I have so many people come to me and say, I ask people a lot of times when they ask me why I'm an atheist, I'll ask them why they believe in God. One guy particularly said, well, I asked God for a sign, and one day I got so many sevens. I said, sevens? I said, were you gambling?
Seven, the perfect number,
yeah,
according
to
the Bible,
he
right?
He says, I saw a lot of sevens on my paycheck, a lot of sevens on my emails, a lot of sevens here. I said, you can understand why I don't consider that as good proof of God, don't you? He said, well, yeah. And that was the end of the conversation. But so many people are willing to settle for something like that. Not only, even when they do get something like that, and they're willing to say that it wasn't a coincidence, still it could be from any God, any supernatural being, or, you know, it doesn't have to be the God of the Bible. It could have been Mormon God, or Buddha, if he's, you know, it's actually living and around and able to interact with our natural universe. It's, I mean, they automatically jump from look at the sevens to it's the Christian God of the old Bible giving me these sevens, which is a hell of a leak.
Exactly. One thing that I wrote in my first book was I quoted Brian Tracy, who said that if we are focused on something and wanting something in our lives, we tend to notice it more in our everyday lives. For example, if you are wanting to have a red sports car, you will tend to notice red sports cars on the interstate or in the parking lot wherever you are, and whatever you focus on, that your mind tends to bring those things to your attention.
Confirmation bias.
Confirmation exactly. bias, absolutely.
Like I used to have a blue Ford Mustang when I was in college, and of course I see them all over the place. They're on my mind, and when I see them, I think, you know, what a coincidence. I don't think that God sent them in my field of view. You know, you have to be realistic about these type of things. Coincidences happen, even though most evangelicals all over the world will tell you there are no such things as coincidences, and everything happens for a reason. I disagree. I mean, coincidences happen all the time.
I would agree that it's not the case that things happen for a reason. To censor myself as far as something that I tend to think, I just believe that sometimes things happen. It's not always some divinely inspired, events that happen to you that, you know, that lead to something better in the future. I think that a lot of people tend to think that things happen for a reason because they want to believe that, because it makes them feel good, because if they had to have something bad happen to them, they think to themselves, oh, well, I can bring something good. I can turn this into something good, and something good can come as a result of this. Yes, something good can come as a result of this, and you can turn a bad situation around to get some good out of it, but that does not mean that thing that happened to you that was bad happened for a reason. You can be optimistic about it and see the silver lining around every black cloud, but as George Carlin was apt to point out, that doesn't mean that the cloud isn't pitch black.
Right. And not only that, but if you do something good, give yourself credit for it. Most Christians I know would gladly turn over everything, every accomplishment that they've ever had, and point to Jesus, say, you know, I got this great job. I'm doing really good. I'm working hard, and you know, but it's not me. It's Jesus. He did this. Or the football guy with the touchdowns, and it's just give yourself some credit. I know. No wonder you're so theoretically so humble, even though I could argue that. But at the same time, you know, give yourself credit for doing good. It's you that's making the difference.
They refuse to give themselves credit, and not only that, they refuse to accept responsibility for their actions. And as many times as the case, when they do something bad, it was Satan tempting them. And they blame the devil for every time they do something wrong. So the devil is essentially the scapegoat, and whenever something good happens in their lives, they say, oh, this was God's handiwork. This is God working through me. And they never take credit for anything good they do, but while at the same time, they never accept responsibility for anything bad they do.
We've got a good, a song on the schedule here that I'll play here in a little bit that kind of goes to this. It's called God Said. It says, it's not me that's saying all this stuff. It's in the Bible. Or it's not me that's causing these armies, or, you know, we're talking about a president now, to come and do this. You know, God said. It's not me, it's him. So I'm going to go ahead and play that for you now and see how it goes.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
Oh, shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me, positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. By the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny. And with the righteous hand, I will bring you to your knees. I will strip you of your freedom without mercy. And when the earth quakes and the blood runs in the sand, there will be no
question
for the unworthy.
Did you know that Delta 5 has a 3-5 blood now?
I'm doing what God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. I stand on a mountaintop on a solid rock. I stand upon this truth and I won't be moved. I stand, and when I come to claim my victory, so you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. And he speaks to only me. I know what God said. What God said. What God
said by Anthony David. It's got a very graphic video available with this music soundtrack on YouTube. If you get a chance to see it, though, I'd highly recommend it. It's got a powerful message. Okay, just moving the mic around a little bit here, give some feedback, give us a second. Okay, I think we're good. You wrote a book yourself. You wrote four books, I understand. The one I read was 10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God Did.
10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God and Other Audacious Atheist Articles.
Why don't you give us a few of those decisions? I'm sure people are asking themselves about that.
Okay, I haven't really brought my book with me, but one of the decisions I would have made is to not kill my son. To not kill my son and claim it enables me to forgive people.
I mean, like he did with Jesus.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take this call. Hello, you're on the air. Hold on just a second while we get the microphone moved over. Okay, see, give us a voice check to see how it works.
Microphone check, microphone check.
Okay. You're coming through. Well, you have a question or comment for us?
Good to go.
Yeah, just generally, I think the idea of atheism was denying sort of some sort of force to the universe. Maybe sometimes makes the same mistake as the Christians and the deists and the people that do subscribe to the idea of an ultimate being, and that I believe that the universe and what the systems that we're caught in are so complex that if our little monkey minds could comprehend even 1% of it, they would explode.
Well, the mitochondria
in our body that gives us the energy to have this conversation right now, to the oxygen cycle that I'm recycling with the trees, how the cycle pattern grows, which is scattered throughout the universe and the galaxy in the pattern, the same pattern, pattern as the water shows where they're portrayed.
Yes.
I would subscribe to, I think that rejecting, I think that the basis is, we don't know. There's no idea. The system is so complex that we don't know. And I reject the idea of a blue-eyed angry space god, but I also don't absolutely not. I understand what's going on.
Okay, well, that's an important point. I call myself an agnostic atheist because there might be some kind of God out there. There may be something hiding on the other side of Alpha Centauri on one of the moons. There might be a God that fits that description. But all of the gods that I've had described to me have self-contradictory properties that I just can no longer subscribe to. But I'm an agnostic atheist because I don't know that there's no God out there anywhere. I just don't believe in any that I've had described to me.
So essentially what you're saying is that you are taken in awe by the universe, and you're saying that the universe is so complex that right now we can't understand all of it, which is essentially the argument of the God of the Gap saying what we don't know we call God. Is that am I understanding your position correctly?
Incorrect. What I'm saying is that I believe that the so-called Christians and the deists and the people that subscribe, I can trust any human being that tells me they understand what's going on, whether they put it in a book, in a philosophy. Whenever a monkey starts saying, we've got the answer, in fact, it's conveniently located in this book we wrote, I know that they do not, and they cannot have the answer. So I guess I'm a sort of skeptical agnostic with my philosophy.
That sounds good. But agnosticism speaks to knowledge, or claimed knowledge. Atheism and theism speak to whether you believe in a God or not. Would you say that you believe in a God?
It depends on my mother actually believed in a corporate Godhead. She believed the universe was so large that no single deity could control it. My father was a confirmed atheist. Mm-hmm. I believe in biology. Mm-hmm. I believe in mitochondria. I believe in what I can observe with my senses.
Yeah.
I guess the closest to that would be the classical deist, the belief if you wanted to understand the architect, study the works.
Mm-hmm. I generally
and,
don't.
The complexity of the works that I see, I see no corresponding philosophy in any religion that describes the creator of that.
Right. No, I have no problem at all with deists or pantheists or panentheists. These people generally do not have dogma that they're trying to pass legislation on or push down my throat or scream at me on the corner. Actually, I think it's a way for people to express their awe of the universe. That's fine with me. I have no problem with it. I have a lot of awe of the expansion and the dynamics of the universe, and I think it's wonderful. I think it's grandiose. I think it's incredible.
I think one of the key problems as an anarchist with religion is the same as in politics or in the media. It's centralization of power. It seems when the media gets really, I mean, when the religion gets deadly, is when it gets so large that it can't even start dictating to people what they should and should not do and think. The Mother Show, keep broadcasting. Thank you so much and have a great evening.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling.
And where were we?
The way I'm understanding that guy, and I hope I'm not putting words in his mouth, is that he is more of the agnostic persuasion, and he does support separation of church and state. Was I understanding him correctly?
I would call him an agnostic deist.
Agnostic deist, okay.
Yeah, which is a good place to be. There's nothing to say that a God does not actually exist. You get down into the areas of whether you believe or not, that's where atheism comes in.
Good. We're going to go now to chapter 18 of Larry's book. Larry's book is entitled Atheism, What's It All About? And it's by Larry S. Rhodes, and chapter 18 is entitled Don't You Atheists Worship Satan? And the quote from that book on page 89 says, Do atheists worship Satan? Short answer, no, we don't. First of all, Satan is part of the Christian belief system. He supposedly is a supernatural being with superpowers. He is also supposedly the incarnation of evil. Since atheists generally don't believe in any supernatural beings, especially those with superpowers who can interact with us here in the real world, we don't believe in him, and therefore we do not worship him. That's like somebody asking you, and I think this is a brilliant quote by Larry here in this book, that's like somebody asking you, you don't believe in Santa? You mean you worship the Grinch?
Yeah. It's just silly to us atheists, because all of you know, all of these devils, demons, angels, cherubim, gods, all of that is part of the Christian pantheism, a panoply of supernatural beings. And why would we buy into one of them when we don't buy into any of the other ones? It just makes no sense.
And one of the one of the experiences I had in relation to what Larry wrote in his book is that a while back in one of my other jobs, I had a coworker who was under the impression, after I told her that I was an atheist, that I worship Satan, and she seemed to be perfectly fine with the idea of me worshiping Satan. And when she told me that she thought that was what I did and that was my thing, I pointed out to her that no, she was incorrect, and the atheists don't believe in Satan, don't believe in God, don't believe in heaven, or don't believe in hell. And after I told her this, she seemed more disturbed by the fact that I didn't believe in God, Satan, heaven, or hell than she did with the with her thinking that I worship Satan. So that's essentially one of the things that, you know, you get when you are an atheist, and when people find out you're an atheist, is this extreme level of confusion over what you actually believe.
So true. I couldn't put it better. Even if you, to believe it or not, Satanists don't believe in Satan.
Was that the Leviathan Satanists
that you normally hear when you hear people talking about Satanism and putting up monuments and things like that? It's just a kind of a counterposition to all the religious indoctrination that you hear through culture these days. They're just taking a position, tongue in cheek, to the opposite bench. But it's kind of hard for us atheists because we always get compared to
labeled
Satanism.
And I think there's actually Levian Satanism, which is what Larry is talking about, and there's actual theistic Satanism, which is worship of the devil.
You don't see much of that, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But even if you did, it would be somebody who was not an atheist. I mean, they would also believe in God. They would just side with the devil.
Yeah.
So,
and chapter 21 from Larry's book. One of the things he wrote is chapter 21. We have the title of chapter 21 being, "How can atheists be moral without accepting biblical morals?" One of the quotes that I like that he wrote on page 100 is when Larry says, "Even the golden rule, claimed by many Christians as having originated with Jesus Christ, was invented in other forms millennia before he lived. Confucius, who lived from 551 B.C. to 479 B.C., said, 'One should not treat others in ways that one would not like to be treated.' This sentiment is also present in Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, Zoroastrianism, as well as most of the other world's religions. Simon Blackburn, in 2001, states that the golden rule can be found in some form in almost every ethical tradition." And one thing I would like to point out is that Jesus had the golden rule, which said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And there's been a platinum rule, which goes that you should do unto others as they would have you do unto them, because not everybody wants to be treated the same way you want to be treated. Some people are huggers. Some people like hugging, and some people don't. And if you like being hugged and you go around hugging everybody, especially people you do not know or just met, they might not like that. So it's better to always go by the platinum rule, which says do unto others as they would have you do unto them, rather than the golden rule, which is, in my opinion, subpar.
That's a good example. I like that. And we've got down about 5 minutes left. What do we want to do with that? Let's talk about the atheist organizations in Knoxville. We'll put a word out for them. The Atheist Society of Knoxville meets every Tuesday at for happy hour in the Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Just come on down. You don't have to read a book or bring anybody. It's just show up if you would like to have some good conversations on this subject, or even if you just like to be among other non-believers. That's happy hour, or 5:30 or 6 at Barley's Tap Room Pizzeria. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meet twice a month, the first and third Sundays at Pellissippi campus at the cafeteria annex. That's every other Sunday, first and third, starting at about 10 o'clock at the Pellissippi campus. Just follow the signs and you'll be there. Okay, and where are we now?
Another quote from Larry's book, which is from chapter 22 is entitled "Atheists Prove That God Does Not Exist: The Burden of Proof." That is, I should probably point out the punctuation there. That is, atheist, as in they are addressing atheists. Atheists, why don't you prove that God does not exist? The burden of proof. And one of the things Larry says is, if your worldview is not swayed by facts or reason, then it is not based on facts or reason.
That's true. And let's talk about the burden of proof for just a second. If I said that I had a new pet, you would accept that. If I said I had a pet dog, you would accept that. Firstly, it's a common occurrence, happens every day. People know what dogs are, and they know that they keep them for pets. Not a problem. Plus, I'm not asking you for money or to do anything. But if I said if I had a pet, it's a dragon, and he's invisible, you have every right to ask me for proof. I have the burden of proof. It's extraordinary for someone to have a dragon, considering that they don't show up, I mean, every corner that you walk by. And if I asked you that you had to believe in this dragon and give me money and do stuff that I told you because I had the dragon, now you have even more reason to demand proof. But this is exactly what religions ask you to do every week. Give money, give time, perform duties for the church, etc., etc. All the way down, some churches even want to tell you how to dress and what medicines you can use and can't use. Medical procedures like blood transfusions. It's amazing that people are not demanding proof of these claims, but yet they don't.
And we'll go to our final quote from Larry. This is from the chapter entitled Chapter 23, Common Misconceptions About Evolution. And on page 113, Larry says, "Knowledge is power, and with the internet, school is always in session." One of the things I like to point out is that it is often said that the internet is where religion goes to die. The internet is probably the best place to get information because information is free. We have Wikipedia, we have all these articles, and even some books that have been put on the internet for air consumption. We have YouTube videos. We have even audiobooks of books that have been copyrighted that people have put the audiobooks on YouTube. The internet is a plethora of information. And as the saying goes, the internet is where religion does go to die, because there's so much information out there that you can literally research anything. Mm-hmm. And that's just what happens when you go to the internet. You discover that your religious beliefs are fallacious and wrong.
And remember, education doesn't end with the last day of school. Well, this is Larry Rhodes and John Webster with the Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm going to take us out with "What If No One's Watching."
Sunset, then the camera would pan away, but the sky is just a little sister tagging along behind the buildings, trying to imitate their graham. Little boys are breaking bottles against the sidewalk with big boys too. Girls are hanging out at the candy store, pumping quarters into the phone. They don't want to go home. I think, what if no one's watching? What if when we're dead, we are just dead? What if God ain't looking down? What if he's looking up instead? Oh, if my life were a movie, I would light a cigarette.